You're listening to another top-rated radio show on the USA Talk Radio Network.
Welcome to the American Hour with your host, Commander Tom Garcia, on the USA Talk Radio Network.
Good evening, everybody. This is Commander Tom Garcia. Welcome to the American Hour. Thank you for joining us. And if you're downloading this after the fact or streaming it after the fact, well, thank you very much. And that's a very easy way to listen to the show. Of course, it doesn't give you the opportunity to call into the show and ask questions, but it's a great way to do it. Now, we are syndicated with iTunes, but you can't find us by looking up the American Hour on iTunes. You have to look up USA Talk Radio. That's where we're located. You'll find all of our shows there if it's easier for you to do it that way. But honestly, go to the website, and the website's real easy to find. My specific page on the website is tomgarcia.com. Now, I want to let you know we hit a milestone on Twitter. We've got over 10,000 followers now on Twitter. We're still hovering around, 2,300 or so, 2,400 on Facebook likes. That's okay. Facebook's a little bit different beast, but we've got a great show for you tonight. I just want to remind you, our last show we had Eric Rush, who is a black conservative commentator, and he broke the story on Obama's ties to Reverend Wright back in 2007. If you missed that show, just go back to last week's show and download it, stream it, whatever you'd like to do. But that's a great show. We had a great conversation. It only lasted about 30 minutes because he could only spend 30 minutes with us, and man, did it go fast. And then Nick Taxia came on, and we finished off the show. Nick Taxia, of course, you know, of Dump Progressive. What a great website. And so our guest tonight is Colonel Jim Harding of Veteran Defenders of America, and we're going to get to him in a second. But I'm going to play some blast from the past tonight of different quotes. Now, one of them is quite recent, and that is Jay Carney doing the tap dance about Benghazi. And just pay attention to what he says about active terror / video and deflects it. What he said repeatedly was, State Department, don't talk to us. State Department, it's their deal. And after Hillary came out and manned up and said, the buck stops here, although you'll notice she said she's responsible but not accountable. She didn't say the word accountable, but she didn't take any blame and laid the blame on the security specialists, our national security specialists that are hired to take care of that stuff. But she said she was responsible. This is how this administration works, responsibility without accountability. We'll talk a little bit to our guest tonight, Colonel Harding, about how that works in the military. Can you have responsibility without accountability? Absolutely not. But let me play this one. It's a couple minutes long of Jay Carney on the embassy murders. If you didn't hear this press briefing the first time, and even if you did, it's good to review and just listen to there's the BS that he's putting out, knowing now that we know that they knew there was no demonstration at all there and that it was an Al-Qaeda-led attack because we had a drone filming it live. We knew exactly what was going on. And when I say we, the intelligence community knew exactly what was going on. Here we go.
In the wake of the attacks in Benghazi, the Pentagon and the State Department both made statements that they then had to correct the Pentagon involving whether or not there were Marines at the embassy in Tripoli. There were not, and the State Department regarding the presence of security firms at the Benghazi compound. Why was there such confusion, and is the White House or anyone conducting any sort of internal investigation as to what went wrong?
Well, there is an ongoing investigation into what happened in Benghazi that's being led by the FBI. And
I'm not talking about the criminal act. I'm talking about the, obviously, there wasn't adequate security. That along the lines of what went wrong, so what the administration could have done better.
Right. I think I would refer you for questions about security at the Benghazi diplomatic facility and broadly speaking, at diplomatic facilities, consulates, embassies around the world to the State Department. In terms of statements that were corrected by defense or state, I would refer you to those departments. From our perspective, we got out to you the information that we had as soon as we had it, and it was available, and our assessment of what happened has been based on the best available information that we've had. There is an ongoing investigation led by the FBI now, going back to specifically what happened in Benghazi, and we await the results of that investigation for more information about the protests and the attacks and what precipitated them and who participated in them, with the primary objective here of fulfilling the president's commitment that the that those people responsible for the deaths of four Americans be brought to justice.
What reason could there be, or let me rephrase that, who made the decision that there should not be Marines in at our diplomatic posts in Libya? More than half of our diplomatic posts have Marines. I understand they're not there to protect people, they're there to protect classified data, but it doesn't hurt to have them there. Who made the decision?
Well, I think security at diplomatic facilities is overseen by and run by the State Department, so I'd refer you to them about how decisions are made and what the allocation of resources was in Benghazi and elsewhere.
Wow, just amazing. Well, listen, our guest is here, Colonel Jim Harding, a U.S. Air Force retired national spokesman for Veteran Defenders of America. How are you doing tonight, sir?
Well, I'm doing great, Tom. I just want to remind everybody that the United States of America is the greatest country in the world.
Well, thank you, sir. Absolutely. Thank you for your service. And what do you think about that briefing that Carney gave, constantly referring everybody, passing the buck to the State Department, and then yesterday the president says, no, the buck stops with me. I'm in charge of security for our forces abroad, et cetera. I'm ultimately responsible. And yet, Jay Carney at the time, oh, no, it's not us. We're not responsible. Oh, no.
Well, it's normal operation for these folks because they have been dumbing down the military since they took over. Bill Clinton took a really big swipe at the military back when he was in power and, in fact, reduced our military by over half, the numbers in the military as well as our equipment. And George W. was just getting it built back up a little bit, and Obama comes along, and now he's taking another swipe at it. And as a result of that, we're in a terrible fix overseas. We're not defending our embassies. We've always defended our embassies. That's sovereign territory, United States sovereign territory in another country. And for this to happen, first of all, when he's asked for more security and didn't get it, secondly, for them to pass it off as a reaction, a spontaneous reaction to something which is absolutely stupid, even though it was true, it was stupidly done. So my point I'm trying to make is that this administration is trying to destroy our military, and they're doing it piecemeal, but they're doing a pretty good job of it. And this is just a primary example of this. And of course, the theory right now is that they were trying to make this as a kind of an October surprise to have our ambassador kidnapped, and then be able to release him just before the election so that that would be show how strong Obama is on the military. And, of course, if you listen to the last two debates, you see that he's taking credit for everything that the military does, but in the same time he's tearing it down.
Yeah, if anything goes wrong with this president, with this administration, it's somebody else's fault. If something goes right, they take credit for it. I find it just despicable the way he takes credit for what our service members are doing out there in the field, and like he made a tough decision. You know what? You could find any six-year-old kid in my neighborhood and said, hey, we got Bin Laden cornered. What do you think we ought to do? Put a bullet through his head. How about that? There would have been no doubt. Yet somehow that's really ballsy of him to make a decision. Anyway, we'll come back to some of this stuff. But I want to introduce you to folks. I brought you up last week. when I was mentioning this upcoming show. You're the national spokesman for Veteran Defenders of America. The mission of Veteran Defenders is to create a nationwide volunteer network of veterans who, through education and information, training and preparedness, serve as a key part of America's frontline grassroots eyes and ears of freedom with respect to threats to our national security and our freedoms, such as the threat of radical Islam. So tell us about your organization, what you guys are focused on, and what's going on that people ought to know.
Well, the first thing is our website is www.veterandefenders.org. And we have a sister organization for people who are not veterans, which is the United States Patriot Union, and that website is www.patriotsunion.org. Now, those websites will give you an awful lot of information about what we're trying to do, and you just read part of it. But to go into a little bit more deeply, we're trying to organize the veterans of the United States. We have some 26 million of us. We're trying to get at least enough that we can make a difference in our local communities. Now, I'm going to give you some things that we've worked on with the Patriots Union in just a minute, but the idea behind our organization is to get veterans who have experience in leadership and organizational skills, as well as probably some type of a skill that they had in the military, and it could be almost anything from a cook to a lawyer to an infantryman, a sailor, or just almost anything that may be useful in an emergency situation, whether it be a natural or a man-made emergency situation. And it looks more like we're getting a little bit better locally at taking care of natural disasters, but I don't think we've got a clue of what could happen to us with a man-made disaster, and that's something I don't think we're prepared for yet. So we're trying to organize at the local level and then have a network to report up through to the top so that if we have an emergency in one area and they don't have the expertise in that area, we could send somebody, a group from another area over to help them out. And so that's the idea behind it, is to be prepared for a disaster. And we think that if these retired or people who have just been in the military, don't have to be retired, could just have served their time, whatever it was, but they're veterans, to be able to not only organize for their own family, but for their community as well, to be able to work with the county disaster preparedness, the local sheriffs, people like that who are going to always need help in a disaster situation. Now, we do other things, and one of the things we've been trying to do is to get legislation passed in all of the states that would essentially, it's called a nullification bill. We call it the Balance of Powers Act. And we worked on this real hard last year and got it through several committees in different states. The idea behind it is if the federal government passes a law which is unconstitutional, and that's real easy to determine. All you have to do is read the Constitution, read the bill, and if it doesn't follow the Constitution, it's unconstitutional. And the state would then say, no, we're not going to enforce this. And the sister bill to that was a sheriff's bill, which would re-enumerate the requirements, the justification, the powers of the county sheriff, which is the ultimate law enforcement authority in the United States. They actually have more power than the state police or some of those folks. And especially in their own community, they have more power than any federal agency. So those two bills, had we been able to get them through, would allow the states to be able to follow the 10th Amendment, which says that the states are sovereign and they have their own power. So that's some of the kind of things we're trying to do. And now what we're working on is to try to show the states, or require the states, if they're going to validate a ballot, that they make sure that everybody who's listed on that ballot is qualified to be a representative of that party, whether Democrat or Republican. And we've actually sent letters to all of the state governors in the Democratic Party and the Republican Party, and and the attorney generals of each of the states to tell them that that's something they should be doing. And the other thing we're going to try to do, of course, is to make sure that everybody is aware of what has happened in the Congress, in the executive branch, and in the judicial branch this past 3.5 years, and say, look, this can't go on. This is unconstitutional. We've got to make some changes.
Okay. Very good. Very good. Yeah, I agree. I absolutely agree with you. there's been a lot going on, and I'm not going to finger point to just one party, but we do know that primarily the Democrats don't like the Constitution, are constantly trying to work around it, and that's been a big problem for the states. You know, in my studies the last couple of years of U.S. history, I've come to the conclusion that the states have essentially screwed themselves. It's the states that have wanted the federal government to do more for them. It really hasn't been the federal government stealing sovereignty and imposing will. I mean, it's happened. But a lot of times, the states are very compliant and have even proposed it, just like the 17th Amendment. That was all – the states wanted that. That wasn't the federal government trying to get greater control over the Senate. It was the states wanting to pass the buck on to the people and the state legislators not wanting to do their jobs. So I'm very disappointed with the states, and one of my big pushes for the last couple of years has been to tell people, pay more attention to local politics. Pay much closer attention to who your state legislators are, because they are doing things that you're not aware of, and you look at the federal government and go like, well, how did we ever end up here? It's because of some of the things that they're doing right here at the state and local levels that's giving the federal government that empowerment. So it's something that has to be looked at very closely. And laws, any laws that we pass, especially at the federal level, that starts to take that sovereignty back. The only problem is there are going to be states that just don't want to do it. Liberal states, states that are liberal in general, have a greater liberal population. It's my belief that they like the federal government taking care of them and would like to just get rid of their state governments. What do you think?
Well, I agree with you, and that's the part that we've been trying to turn around. We've been working very hard, not only through the Veteran Defenders and the Patriots Union, but with the local Tea Parties. In Tennessee, we have, as you know, different congressional districts, and what we've tried to do is to make sure there's a Tea Party in each county. And then we organize those Tea Parties as a congressional district group of Tea Parties. For instance, we have one congressional district here that has, I think, 12 counties in it. And so far, we've got 10 of those counties with Tea Parties, and we're just about ready to start another Tea Party in another county in the same district. And the idea behind that is there's a lot more power with a coalition of folks than there is with a Tea Party here and a Tea Party there and so on. And what we've tried to do is concentrate not only on the state elections, and we just unseated a rhino that had been in for a long time and had the governor and everybody else behind her. But we were able to support, with the help of the NRA and some other folks, a retired lieutenant colonel, a young lady that is very, very dynamic, a good Christian lady and so on. And that's what we do. We work together to make things happen. And, of course, we're doing the same thing now at the county level. We're talking about county commissioners. We're talking about city mayors, county mayors, sheriffs, and so on. The idea behind it is to try to get the counties to take responsibility for their own needs and necessities so that they don't have to accept state money. Then the next thing we try to do is get the state to accept responsibility so that they don't have to accept federal money. And especially, we're trying to educate everybody in the state to understand that if the United Nations gives you something, they're going to want something back for it. We've been pushing the agenda of Agenda 21 and Governance 2025 very, very hard so that our legislators know what it's about, that our county mayors and so on know what it's about. And they understand that if if you get a grant to do something like do a project, some kind of project, we'll say a wetlands project or something that they want you to do, they'll give you a grant to get it started, but then you've got to pay for it after that. And they've got their fingers in you, and they're telling you what to do. Well, it's the same thing with the federal government. If they give you money, they're going to have their fingers in your pie and telling you what to do. We just recently got a $2.1 million grant for our county from the state. Well, the problem with that is, well, it's wonderful. We can do some things here and there and so on, but now we have to do what the state wants us to do. And that's not what we want. We've got to not only get the sovereignty of the states, but we've got to get the sovereignty of the local level, too. The school boards at the county level need to be more involved in what's going on with education. There should be nothing in the federal level at all with education. It should be totally out of education.
Right. I agree.
Each state should be handling their own, and the state should put that down to the county level.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, now, what do you think about this concept of responsibility without accountability? We've heard it now from both a president and the Secretary of State. They're responsible for our service members overseas, whether it be diplomats or the military, and yet there's always somebody else to blame for the failures. Because, you know, like Biden said, oh, we didn't know. Was that ever an excuse when you were in the military that, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't know it? Let's say something went wrong on your watch or in your squadron and you were the commanding officer. Could you get away with saying, well, gee, I didn't know about it?
No. That's a short answer, but the long answer is that you actually had more accountability than you had responsibility. We're talking about a corporal or something, an airman, first class or something like that, has accountability. Now, they don't have much responsibility, but they have accountability because they have to understand that if they do something, they have to be accountable for it. And you can see what happened with these guys over there in Afghanistan and some in Iraq and other places where they did something wrong. Immediately, they came down on those guys. They made them accountable for their actions. Now, there were responsible officers, but they were also accountable. And I can remember something that happened that just broke my heart because a very good friend of mine was essentially fired. He was a brigadier general, and he was in charge of security in Saudi Arabia when the barracks were blown up over there. He had gone in and suggested some 120, 124, 25 security breaches and had given them fixes for those, and they ignored him. And sure enough, they drove a truckload of phosphate or something like that up and blew the barracks and killed a bunch of our airmen over there. Well, they fired him even though he had been accountable for that. He took the responsibility and he tried to fix it, but his higher echelon ignored his request. He's the one that got fired.
Uh-huh.
Not the people who were ultimately responsible and accountable. It's just like Obama right now. He is responsible, and he should have been accountable. When they asked for more security, he should have immediately taken that action. And it almost looks like he didn't take the action because he wanted what happened to happen. And that, I know that's being kind of harsh, but that's the only way I can figure it out, that they wanted that to happen so that they could create some kind of a fiasco over there. It's the same thing that happened in Egypt and in Libya. It's happening in Syria right now. They're allowing these Muslim Brotherhood to run roughshod over the forces that we had actually been, I guess you would call an armed friendship with for many years. Now, it's not that Gaddafi wasn't a bad guy. In fact, Reagan killed a few members of his family with a F-111 strike some years ago, and it straightened him out pretty good. And then again, he stopped all of his nuclear enrichment when we did in Iraq. So he's the one that could have been controlled, as was Mubarak. Same thing. Mubarak was controlled, and he kept the treaties that he had made with Israel and so on. So here we come now with this group, and they kill these two guys or put them out of office. And now we've got this Muslim Brotherhood who have said that they're going to reestablish a worldwide caliphate or a Muslim rule over the whole world, and have said they're going to put the Muslim flag up over the White House.
Yeah.
And by the way, I'm not sure that it's not already there.
Yeah. There's probably one inside. I wouldn't be surprised. Yeah. You know, well, that, my take on this has been that Obama wanted to create this illusion that our helping, which was unconstitutional and illegal on his part, helping in Libya. You know, this always kills me. You're an aviator, too. Well, he kept saying, we don't have any boots on the ground in Libya. Now, you and I know there were boots on the ground. But second of all, so boots in the air don't count? Aviators are worthless. We can throw them away. They're a dime a dozen. Now, soldiers on the ground, that's illegal according to the Constitution without congressional approval. But aviators in the air dropping bombs? Nah, that's not covered. What a schmuck. So in any case, that really ticked me off when he kept saying that. Nobody called him on it. You know, somebody should just simply said, what about boots in the air? Is that a problem? Is that a constitutional problem? But anyway, I think he wanted to create the sense that what we did was good. It was the right thing to do, even though it violated the Constitution. And look at the results. You know, we got our diplomats over there. Everybody's, you know, huggy-huggy, and everything's going just great. Now, before this attack happened, I wasn't predicting this kind of thing would happen, but I was asking people. I've got some friends that are former diplomats, and I said to them, why do we have consulates in Libya and Egypt right now? They are so unstable and dangerous. We could send people over periodically to meet with folks, but why do we have an established embassy and consulates in these two highly unstable, dangerous countries? They shouldn't even be there. And, of course, their responses always are, no, we shouldn't even have them over there. But it's trying to create this illusion like, see, we can get along with the Muslim Brotherhood, and everybody loves us now because I'm Barack Obama.
Well, that's a big fallacy right now.
Yeah.
It all boils down to what we call in the military rules of engagement. And if you look at what's happened in the last 3 or 4 years, you'll see that the rules of engagement have changed drastically. And those rules of engagement, by the way, are supposed to be something that we don't talk about. That's just something that we know. We tell our people, this is what you can do, this is what you can't do. And you have to follow these rules if you're going to be part of the military. You break these rules, we're going to break you, essentially what it amounts to.
Yeah.
We started changing our rules of engagement about the time we got involved with Korea, when the Chinese would come across into Korea and attack us, and when we would chase them back, we had to stop at the border. We couldn't go chase them back into their homeland. And that was criminal, because that's like, you know, you draw a line in the sand and it's okay, you can't come across this line. But they can come across. So you're hampering people. We ran into the same thing in Vietnam, when they came down from the north again, we were only allowed to go up so far. They would put their guns on dams and dikes and things like that, and we were not allowed to bomb anything that had to do with water supply.
Yeah.
You know, we keep getting more and more pristine with how we attack the enemy. In World War II, we went in and attacked a whole city. In fact, that's what the Germans and the British tried to do, is to wipe out the civilian population to make them quit so they would quit fighting. We have now gone into the almost exact opposite, where we can only bomb a target. We cannot have any collateral damage around it. And it's gotten now where, at least in Vietnam, you were always had your weapons loaded when you were on patrol. Now in Afghanistan, they're not even allowed to have their magazines and their rifles when they're out on patrol. They're now just recently stopped allowing them to drop weapons from aircraft. Troops can be in a firefight, and the aircraft can't come in and drop weapons to help them out. the Marines who are guarding the embassy didn't have weapons loaded. You do not put somebody in combat unless they are able to defend themselves. And it's always been an adage that the best defense is an offense. If you're sitting there on defense, you will never, ever, ever win, because you're going to always be on the defense. You'll never have the capability to win, because they can attack you and they can draw back. And if you never attack them, then they can go regroup and come back at you again later. So this is what's happened to us over there in the Middle East right now. We are trying to essentially put our soldiers, sailors, airmen, and Marines into combat. First of all, they don't have the equipment that they should have, and secondly, they don't have the rules of engagement that allow them to be able to do what they have to do.
Yeah, that's despicable. That's despicable. Now, I want to ask you a question. I'm going to play some cuts here tonight, and after you're gone and done, but I want to play one now. Again, your experience in the military, I want to let people know that you are the 24th most decorated hero in military history, seen a lot of combat time. And I'm sure that's not something that you go around telling people a lot about, but I wanted to let people know. So we really appreciate your service. But you know leadership. You've been there. You've done it, both in peacetime and in combat. What do you think of a leader that is purported to be just the smartest president we've ever had, just a genius, but whenever he talks to us, it's always in platitudes. He never gives us details. He goes after Romney for not coming up with details. I'm going to play a little clip of Obama talking about the economy, and I'm just amazed at how technical and detailed he can get about the economy and the problems we're having and why we're having them. This is a little satire here, but it takes about 40 seconds, and then give me your take on it, Colonel, after we play this.
We're now seeing some headwinds.
Headwinds. Some tough headwinds.
One of the headwinds that the economy is experiencing.
Our economy has been facing some serious headwinds.
We're facing some tough headwinds.
Obviously, we're experiencing some headwinds.
The economy's experienced some tough headwinds.
The biggest headwind the American economy is facing right now.
Some strong headwinds this year.
Those two things are huge headwinds in terms of growth.
We've got some headwinds, and there will continue to be some headwinds.
And just like at this time last year, still facing some serious headwinds. Our economy has been facing some serious headwinds.
What do you think of that? I mean, he's so technical, isn't he?
Well, all I can say is that he, as you say, he deals in platitudes. He does not come up with original thoughts. And it, even when someone faces him down on it, which Romney has done, he continues to use the same platitudes. We're going to do this, we're going to do that. You've done this, or you've done that. And he's been proven wrong, but they'll go right back out the next day and make a speech saying the same thing all over again. And it boils down to the old communist rule. And if you remember, Obama had a lot of communist background. Bill Ayers, Saul Alinsky, Davis over in Hawaii, all these people are communists, and they have been advising him. And what the communists believe, if you say something often enough, it will become truth. Doesn't make any difference if it's true or not. If you tell a lie enough, then that lie becomes to them the truth. Now, the way I have always done is I do it just the opposite. I say, okay, if you tell the truth, you never need to worry that someone's going to trip you up. Because if you've told the truth, you know what you said before, because you're telling somebody exactly what's happened. So what you hear there is him making up an excuse for his failure. Headwinds. It's the lie. It's the repetition. It's the communist way of doing things. You keep repeating it until everybody believes it. And, of course, he's got the mainstream media backing him up on it 100%. You can see that something will be said by one news agency, say, at the 5 o'clock in the morning report. Then throughout the day, it'll be the same thing over and over and over again. And their theory is that if they say it enough, and they're saying it from their pulpit of the of the mainstream media, ABC, NBC, CBS, CNN, and so on, then people are going to believe that. And even though you discredit them, and they even may admit it later on that, oh, that wasn't really true, it's been said so much that there's probably a percentage of the population that think that's true. And that's what's happened with him right now. He has said so many times that the economy that he had when he took over was so bad that there was no way he could fix it. And so now what he's doing is he's going back on that again, saying, I need 4 more years, because 4 years just wasn't enough because it was so bad when I took over. Irregardless of the fact that when the first 2 years, he had a bulletproof House and Senate behind him.
Well, and you know what? I think Benjamin Franklin said something about people that make excuses. People that are good at making excuses aren't really good for much else. And I've even got a clip of Obama pledging to cut the deficit. Now, he said he was going to cut it. Now, here's what brings to mind, and I love having another military guy on so we can talk about the military, because everybody respects the military and how straightforward we are and how we get the job done. If somebody comes into your command and says, I can get this done, Colonel, and then they don't, well, they either weren't being truthful with you or they're probably incompetent. Now, I know a lot of times people will say, I will do the best I can, Colonel, and then, you know, they do the best they can. But when somebody comes up to you and brings it up without being asked to begin with to do this, and makes a promise and a pledge, they're either a liar or they're incompetent. But here we go with his pledge to cut the deficit.
And that's okay. Why today I'm pledging to cut the deficit we inherited by half by the end of my first term in office.
So that's what he pledged, and he's not been able to do it. But it's headwinds, and it was Bush's fault. Well, you know what? Then if he couldn't foresee these headwinds and problems, that he doesn't have the experience and the capability to get the job done, and we need somebody else in place.
Well, that's true, we do. We need somebody else in place, because that's just a very minor thing that he did. He not only didn't cut it in half, he's doubled it. And the part that's been more egregious, as far as I'm concerned, is what he's done for the elderly, the ones that have built this great country up to what it is, and now they're going to be saddled with a loss of their earning power, of their savings, of their retirement funds and so on. Because with this new Obamacare, it's going to decimate what these folks have. First of all, it's going to raise the cost of their Medicare Part D payments. Secondly, it's going to lower their value of the dollars that they're getting, and they're not going to get any more dollars. They've got a fixed amount of dollars they're going to get, but those dollars are going to buy so much less than they would have when they retired or when they got the end of their work life. So it's really a double sword. He's taxing us more, and our funds are worth less. Now, as a leader, when you don't produce, you're no longer a leader. This is the military way, and we've had a lot of people who have tried to be a leader, and they failed as a leader, so they ended up doing staff work or something like that. They were taken out of those leadership positions. The sad part about our military today is that we have now promoted people up to the 3- and 4-star rank who are bootlickers. These are people who want to have that rank and want to have the prestige and everything and go with it, but they're not willing to make the hard decisions that are necessary for them to protect their assets, the assets that they're responsible for. And this is why we've allowed homosexuals to openly serve in the military. We've allowed them to cut our benefits. We've allowed them to stop our missile defense, stop production of aircraft that we need, stop production of ships and boats that we need, stop production of vehicles for the Army and the Marines that we need. And we're cutting our military personnel down to the point where we're having to use National Guard and Reserve troops to fight our wars. We've got National Guardsmen that have been four or five times over to Iraq and Afghanistan. And yet we still have our active duty troops stationed in England and Korea and all these other places. We should have those troops available to fight the wars, and we should fight the war to win. We should fight the war in such a way that if we're say that it's in Pakistan and the Pakistanis are protecting somebody, then we blow up that village, period. We just blow that village up, and if we blow up enough villages, they're going to, oh, okay, you do mean business. This is what you do. You don't stand out there and talk like a big bully saying, if you do this, I'm going to do this. You do it. You don't even have to tell anybody you're going to do it. You just do it. And that's exactly what George W. did with the Taliban when we first started. That mission accomplished sign was mission accomplished. But what he had to do is then he had to listen to Congress and all these other people, the world leaders, and try to build schools and roads and everything in a country that doesn't need schools and roads and so on, don't want them. They don't want democracy. When the Muslims took over Afghanistan from the Buddhists, it's a whole different lifestyle, and they don't care a whit about what the rest of the world is doing. They want to do their own thing. And if we would just either defeat them or get out of there, that's the two options as far as I'm concerned. There is no third option. You either defeat the enemy and they surrender unconditionally, or you get your troops out of there. You're not willing to do what it takes to defeat them.
I absolutely agree. This whole concept of nation building. Look, were you and I trained on how to nation build? No, that was not our purpose. There is one sole purpose for the military, and that is to win wars, period. Now, we all have different jobs within the military, but our goal is to win wars. And I think Patton said it very well. I'm going to paraphrase him, that we're talking about World War II. The way we're going to get out of this war is we're going to kill people. And the more we kill, the faster we'll get out of this war, or we'll end this war. And that's the truth. So I used to, at the end of my career, when I was going around giving lectures and talking about the, you know, well, it was, I won't get into what it was about, but at one point we talked about the role of the military, and I said just that. The role of the military is to win wars. And how do we win wars? We kill people and destroy things. We don't build things up. We kill people and destroy things. That's what we do. And to try and make the military do something else, that's why we've lost so many lives in Afghanistan and Iraq, and to me it's criminal. Now, there's my little...
By the way.
And oh my gosh, Vietnam. Yeah, my father served in Vietnam, and you know, praise the Lord, he's still with us today, and he flew a lot of combat missions as a helicopter pilot with Special Forces, and he was in the Air Force, and you know, did a lot of work with forces, and that was a very dangerous, as you know, you were a combat pilot there, very, very dangerous business, and the rules of engagement that you talked about earlier really limited. My dad would be flying along this helicopter. He'd see the Viet Cong. He knew it was them. He could see the bandanas they were wearing that highlighted exactly who they were, but he couldn't shoot at them because they weren't shooting at him. They were just transporting weapons and supplies, et cetera, and we couldn't cut off their supply line because they weren't shooting at us. So in any case, we've got a caller, and if I understand correctly, he's a former cadet of yours. His name is Ben, and hopefully – he's not one of those cadets that used to call you hard-ass Harding, and he'll have some nice things to say, but we'll see. Let me bring him on here and turn his mic on for us. Ben, introduce yourself to the Colonel.
Yeah, this was Cadet Tech Sergeant Ben Schwenk from J-ROTC, Ramstein, Germany.
How you doing, Ben? Good to hear from you.
Thank you. You too. I follow you on Facebook an awful lot.
Oh, that's great. You probably know that I can't think of his last name now, our NCO over there, is living out in California.
I just wanted to say we follow you a lot, and I actually speak to several people who are very liberal, and I use a lot of information that you cite on a regular basis. To help get points across and help encourage and motivate to the more conservative side of things.
Well, good on you, because one candidate is who I was trying to think of. But anyhow, that's great, and I'm glad you're doing that. That's what we've got to do. We've got a real task in front of us, because those people that are, as you say, a little bit liberal, they need to be educated. And the only way they're going to get educated is we've got to do it.
Absolutely. I guess the question I have, growing up as a military brat and things like that, I mean, we have our own issues, but something I'm noticing is that a lot of the brats are changing to the liberal side of things. I don't know if it's just to be anti-Air Force or anti-military because their parents were in it and they're pushing away, but I have several friends that are doing that, and I'm like, you were raised with the same values I had, the same system that we grew up with, and now you're pushing away from that. I don't understand that. Do you have any ideas of why that might happen?
I sure do. It's real simple. If you don't follow the leader, you won't be there anymore. You probably know that from 2-star on, they're temporary promotions. So you serve at the will of the president. Any moment you could lose, say you're a 4-star, any moment you could lose those 2 stars and be retired as a 2-star. In other words, you'd go from 4-star to 2-star in retirement. So that's one thing. Another thing is that if you're going to get the jobs that you want, you're going to have to be able to satisfy your superiors. And right now we have nothing but liberals, and we had them for 8 years under Clinton, and we've got them now for almost 4 years under Obama. And just when we were starting to clean the military out a little bit and get rid of some of these, we're going back to being subservient to their master, so to speak. In other words, to get the power, they have to do what they have been told to do. When this thing of homosexuals in the military came up, every one of those chiefs of staff, the Army, Navy, Air Force, and Marines, to have said, hey, look, either we're not going to do this or we're going to resign. And, of course, what will happen is they'll just bring somebody else up. You saw it happen to the chief of staff of the Air Force and the Air Force Secretary of the Air Force. When they didn't go to the line, they took them out and they put somebody else in. It was much, much weaker than they were. And this guy we've got now as chairman of the Joint Chiefs, is a joke. He's just a total joke. He does not belong at the hierarchy of our military right now. And I'll say that right to his face. He's let the military down big time.
I guess that shows with all the dependents that are out there too, and they start feeling it.
I think so.
They feel it from the people that are actually serving, and so it trickles down to the families, and then they start resenting being there.
I don't see how anybody that's in the military and is a Christian can support a Democrat because of what the Democrats are doing to our country right now. It just doesn't make any sense to me, and I talk about that all the time with groups, and it's something that's very, very difficult for me to accept, because I don't know very many of these people that are high-ranking officers right now, but I know some of the ones that used to be there, and I do know that they would not have done that. In fact, I remember when with the chairman of the Joint Chiefs resigned. I was just talking about Terry Swallier, the Brigadier General. When he got fired, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs at the time said, okay, you're firing him. I can't. If you're going to do that to my officers, I can't take that. So he resigned. And that's what you got to do. You got to talk with your feet.
Interesting. Well, thanks so much. Thanks, Colonel.
Thanks for calling in.
Okay. Thanks for calling in. We appreciate that.
Absolutely. Yeah. Many blessings.
Thanks. Take care. Thanks for your service.
All right. Bye.
All right. Well, that was a pleasant surprise, huh?
That was indeed.
Well,
we had a great time over in Germany.
I'll bet. Oh, boy. I had an opportunity to go over there as a Navy planner, and I turned it down when I was toward the end of my career in the reserves, and I kind of regret that. I thought what I was doing at the time was important, and it was, but it would have changed the course of my career a little bit. I'd probably still be in right now, actually, in the reserves. I wouldn't have retired. But in any case, well, Colonel, listen, tell us one more time where your website is and what you're doing and how people connect with you on Facebook and the web. And I know you've got another interview tonight at 9 o'clock, don't you?
That's correct. We're going to do an interview on the Blog Talk Radio interview, and it's actually going to be on rules of engagement. But the main thing that people need to understand is we've got to get our veterans involved because they're the leaders. I don't care whether you're a private or a corporal or whatever. If you served in the military, just going through basic training and so on, you learn skills that a lot of people, the civilian counterparts, don't have. And our website is veterandefenders.org. And if those people who are listening who would like to be a part of trying to turn our country around, we have Patriots Union, the United States Patriot Union. That website is patriotsunion.org. It doesn't cost very much to join up. You'll get a lot of great information from that website, and it changes quite often, especially right now. It's almost a daily change. I'd say probably every other day or so, the information on that website changes because as things happen, we try to react to get to take care of that. And so we need people to become a part of the solution rather than sitting back and not doing anything. In other words, what I have to say to veterans, all people, get off the couch, get out there and do something, because we're losing our country very rapidly. And if we don't do something about it, it will be gone and it'll be too late, because we cannot turn it around. If this man gets reelected, there is going to be an awful lot of problems that are going to be almost insoluble in another 3 or 4 years.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Well, Colonel, thank you so much for your service. Thanks for coming on the show tonight. Good luck with what you're doing, and we'll keep promoting your website because you guys are doing have a great effort going on there and making some real headway. And even after this election is over, there's still a lot to be done, as you said, at the local and state levels. We've got to get control of our state and local governments so that we can get control of our federal government. And there's a lot of stuff to be done.
That's very true. And that's so true, because if we get complacent, we had 6 years with George W. Bush. We wasted those 6 years. We could have gotten so much done because we had the control to do that. We could have made some changes for our retirement systems, for our monetary systems, gotten the federal government out of our school systems, gotten the federal government and the ACLU and the atheists out of our churches. And right now, we have been attacked from the left and the right. We're being attacked from the left by the communists and the right by the Muslims. And we've got them infiltrated in our government all the way up to the top. So we have got to make a change and get that back on track. And I think probably the best way to do it is to do what our founding fathers did. When they needed help, they prayed. And we've got to start doing the same thing.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, Colonel, God bless you. Thank you so much for your service to your country and your continued service. And we look forward to following what you guys are doing and hearing back from you sometime in the future. Thank you so much.
Okay, anytime. Just give me a holler. Thanks.
Okay. All right, take care. Good night.
Bye.
Well, that was great. That was awesome. We're going to finish up the night with a couple of flashbacks to review what has gone on in this current administration. Here's a clip you're all familiar with.
You got a business. That, you didn't build that. Somebody else made that happen. You got a business. That, you didn't build that. Somebody else made that happen. You got a business. That, you didn't build that. Somebody else made that happen.
Oh, boy. Yeah, that's great. We can't let people forget that, our socialist in chief. Now, the next clip I played on a show a few months back when gas started, creeping back up again. And this is where the media is carrying the water for this president. We're going to go back to people like Nancy Pelosi, Dianne Feinstein, making comments about how under George Bush, when gas went up there for a while, that it was all his fault. All his fault. But then watch the media
carry the water, and the comments they make that, well, the gas going up, actually, there's some upsides to it. I mean, unbelievable. This one's about 49 seconds.
Are they also bringing up the Iran uncertainty, the improving economy, the kinds of things we just heard from John Kilduff?
Sure, they'll bring that up, but of course it's in their interest from a political perspective to talk less about kind of the underlying economic factors that are maybe outside of the president's control and focus more on what they claim the president could do or is not doing to fix the situation. Now, the truth is that, you know, the administration will push back and say, look, you know, we've opened up a lot of areas to drilling, as your report pointed out. And the truth is that the president may not be able to do anything in the short term to head off these prices because they're being driven by forces that are global in nature and not centered here. But the Republicans aren't going to focus on that. They want people to believe and to understand that it's the president at fault.
Okay, so there's today's media spin on the Republicans trying to convince you. Let's listen to some Democrats tell you that it is the president's fault. This is when Bush was president.
What do you say to people who are losing patience with gas prices at $3 a gallon?
What we are seeing is, you know, a government run for the oil company. Drivers are paying a heavy price for the Bush administration's failure to enact a comprehensive energy strategy. This Congress, under the Democratic leadership, is working to make up for years of inaction, taking America in a new direction that helps bring down the cost of gas. Gas prices have more than doubled since George Bush became our president.
I understand how desperate folks are. I mean, I met a guy who couldn't go on a job search, had lost his job, couldn't go on a job search because of the high price of gas. Just couldn't fill up his tank. I met a teacher in South Dakota who loved her job as a teacher on an Indian reservation. She had to quit because the drive was too far. It was taking up too much of her paycheck. I know how bad people are hurting.
You know, if you're complaining about the price of gas and you're only getting 8 miles a gallon, you know, well, you may have a big family, but it's probably not that big. So how many of you have? 10 kids, you said? 10 kids?
What a schmuck.
Well, you definitely need a hybrid van then.
High gas and oil prices would be a blessing in disguise, but they are. As Victor Lopez found out, they're causing a big jump in the number of jobs.
We turn now to five things you should know about gas, specifically why gas prices, even at over $4 a gallon, can sometimes be a good thing.
And we know that rising gas prices are forcing us to search for alternative fuels and more fuel-efficient cars. There are some other reasons to be optimistic about the high cost of gas. Here are just a few of them.
2,220 people have already been saved over the past year because a reduction in driving has led to less particle pollution in the air. If gas prices stay at $4 a gallon for a year or more, then we can expect that about 1,000 people a month will not die.
Wow. You know what? I have a solution for saving lives. Everybody stop driving their cars. We won't be polluting, and nobody will die in car accidents. There you go. Yeah, all solved. So it's such a positive to have high gas prices. Such a positive. Except if you have a Republican president, then people are hurting, and it's all the administration's fault. It's all Bush's fault. Yeah, but high gas prices now, it's a blessing. Yep, so there you go. If you're on the fence, you don't know who to vote for. Vote for the guy who's driving gas prices up and tell you it's a blessing. It's a blessing. Okay, what's the next one we're going to listen to? Let's see here. Now, we just had Eric Rush on last week, and he was the one who broke the story on Reverend Wright. Now, let's hear Obama claim that he never heard Reverend Wright talking about any of this bad stuff, any of this black liberation theology and Marxism and anti-American hatred. Never heard it in 20 years. Nope.
The U.S. of KKKA?
You never heard those comments?
I hadn't heard those comments.
He was selling them in the lobby to church.
What can I tell you?
How many times did you go to church a month?
You know, I'd probably go twice a month.
And he never said inflammatory stuff?
He didn't say stuff like that, all right?
Did he say white people were bad?
No.
So we just heard Bill O'Reilly specifically ask President Obama if he ever heard Reverend Wright say anything
bad about whites, and the president says no. But then we have the president in his own words from his own book, Dreams of My Father, quoting Reverend Wright, and here's what he had to say.
It is this world, a world where cruise ships throw away more food in a day than most residents of Port-au-Prince see in a year, where white folks' greed runs a world in need, apartheid in one hemisphere, apathy in another hemisphere. That's the world.
Wow, but he never heard Reverend Wright say anything racial, except that right there, which is in his book, and then on his audio tape in his own voice. Yeah, okay, so that's why we refer to him as the liar in chief. Now, we know that, what else? Let's find him. Oh, yeah, yeah, this is despicable. Remember Shovel Ready Jobs? Shovel Ready, Shovel Ready. Let me see if I've got the clip where he talks about, oh, yeah, here it is. He talks about all the Shovel Ready Jobs. He guarantees us people will be put back to work. Now, you know that the stimulus money, the majority of it, went to what? State governments, local governments, state governments to stay afloat for people that were already employed. So it didn't create any jobs. There were no shovel-ready jobs to get people back to work. We did keep people from at work. That's because states mismanaged their budgets, just like the federal government. But the federal government can actually print money. So here he is telling us about all the wonderful shovel-ready jobs that are just ready to go.
I think we can get a lot of work done fast. When I met with the governors, all of them have projects that are shovel-ready. We've got shovel-ready projects all across the country. Shovel-ready projects, rebuilding our roads, our bridges. We are seeing shovels hit the ground. Shovels are breaking ground. There are almost 100 shovel-ready transportation projects already approved in Colorado, which are beginning to create jobs.
Now here's what he said about a year later.
Shovel-ready was not as shovel-ready as we expected. Shovel-ready was not as shovel-ready as we expected.
Ha ha, and it's a big joke. There he is with his economic advisors. Ha 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 ha, laughing about, oh, ho, ho, ho. Ha ha ha. Yeah, it's so funny. Shovel-ready wasn't as shovel-ready as we thought. All right, I want to cover a couple last things here real quickly. Number one. Conservative Scoops. Go to the website conservativescoops.org. New website by our good friend Susan Bradford. It's sort of a, I don't want to describe it. You just go check it out. It's a conservative website with articles, blogs, and yes, I will be, my name is right there. I will be blogging on there soon. I just haven't set it up yet, but I'm going to start blogging for her website. It's a news outlet website. If you remember, we've had her on the show several times. She was the author of Lynched, the book about Jack Abramoff and how he got lynched. And a very interesting book, really revealing about our government, and as well as John McCain, our not friend John McCain. And in fact, I think it was back in August, I actually went on Abramoff's radio show. He's got a Sirius Satellite radio show, and I went on there for a little while and chatted with him briefly for a little bit. He was at the, where was he? I think he might have been at the Republican, was it leading up to maybe the RNC convention? But in any case, he was broadcasting there live, and I went on the show for about the last 15 minutes with his show. But in any case, that's Susan Bradford. Great site, looks really nice, and you can contribute too. It's a nice feedback form. And they're looking for scoops. You got any ideas? You've seen a really good story that ought to be on there. You can have some input. This can be your conservative news website. You can help make it a better site and have actual direct input to Susan. So check that out, conservativescoops.org. Don't miss it. Okay. Now, I want to talk about a couple. The media is covering this over and over. And, well, the president said the day after the Benghazi attack that he did say it was a terrorist attack. Wait a minute. He said terrorist, something about terrorists, but so he kind of got it. No, he didn't. Let me tell you, I'm not seeing it anywhere in the news. Let me tell you, if you look at the transcript, he goes on and on and on about the video, and toward the end, he talks about 9/11. Here's what he had to say. Of course, yesterday was already a painful day for our nation as we marked a solemn memory of the 9/11 attacks. So he talks about visiting the graves of troops, and the sacrifice of troops in Iraq and Afghanistan, and going to Walter Reed, and as Americans never let us
to forget that our freedom is only sustained because there are people willing to fight for it and stand for it. Next sentence. No acts of terror will ever shake the resolve of this great nation. So he's kind of given a little post 9/11 speech about the original 9/11. No acts of terror will ever shake the resolve of this great nation, alter that character, or eclipse the light of the values that we stand for. Today, we mourn four more Americans. Okay? Four more. So now he's moving back on to Benghazi. That is talking about 9/11 back in 2001. No acts of terror. He was talking about that terror act. Today, we mourn four more Americans who represent the very best of the United States of America. We will not waver in our commitment to see that justice is done for this terrible act. Now he's talking specifically about the Benghazi attack, and it's a terrible act. Not a terror act, not an act of terrorists, a terrible act. Okay? So, he lied when he said that he called it a terror attack. He called 9/11 a terror attack, and in generality said, we won't accept, we will not stand for terror, acts of terror, on our country. It won't shake this great nation in his 9/11 outtake there. Okay? That's where the terror came in. So you don't have to parse, well, acts of terror, or it was a terror act, or it was committed by terrorists. No, he was talking about 9/11. All right, now let's jump over to one more item on this that you may not be getting, believe it or not, in the Washington Post by Jennifer Rubin. More evidence of deception. Would you remember it was that the sound audio, and I tried to get it, but it just didn't sound good, so I didn't want to do it. When Carney was, I think, trying to get on the airplane, Air Force One, and he was asked about, have you called it a terrorist attack before? This was 8 days after Obama claims to have called it an act of terror. Carney says, I haven't, but I mean, people attacked the embassy. It's an act of terror by definition. So now they're dancing around the terror term. If the president had called it an act of terror the day after it occurred, do you think Carney would not have been calling it that also? So the questionnaire, yes, I just hadn't heard you. Well, it doesn't have to do with what date it occurred. In other words, it's 9/11. It didn't have anything to do with 9/11. It was remember the video. He didn't say that, but he just says it doesn't have to do with the date it occurred. Question, no. I just hadn't heard the White House say that this was an act of terrorism or a terror attack. Carney, I don't think the fact that we hadn't is not – okay, so there it is. I don't think the fact that we hadn't called it a terrorist attack. That's what he's saying. So in other words, it was not labeled a terrorist attack up to that point, 8 days later, as our NCTC director testified yesterday. Well, now they're caught. Now they have to call it a terrorist attack. A number of different elements appear to be involved in the attack, including individuals connected to militant groups that are prevalent in eastern Libya. We are looking at indications that individuals involved in the attack may have connections to Al-Qaeda, in particular Al-Qaeda Islamic Maghreb. Here, White House, let's see. So he said a number of different elements appear to have been involved in the attack. No, a number of different elements, one element, one Al-Qaeda-linked group, period. There was no uprising. There was no protest. So let's see if she had anything else good in here to say. You know, the other thing to say is that David Axelrod, when being interviewed, I think this last weekend, was asked, well, did he, the president, meet with the National Security Council? He's like, well, you know, he's in close contact with them. There was no actual meeting. Because the president himself said, now this was the response in the debate, so as soon as we found out that the Benghazi consulate was being overrun, I was on the phone with my national security team. He was on the phone. Couldn't meet with him because, you know, he had to get packing and head off to Las Vegas for his fundraiser. That's his priority. Okay, so anybody's on the fence, this guy is a self-serving doesn't care about anybody else. We just see the article, I think yesterday, somebody that used to work in the administration saying, I'm surprised that he ever even made it to President of the United States because he really doesn't like people, just doesn't like people. I'll tell you what he likes. He likes adulation. He likes being the king. But he doesn't like people. Think of many kings in history that didn't like the people. Be a king, like the riches and the wealth and the fame, but they didn't like people. And that's what we have today, a president who just doesn't like people. And it shows his disdain for a lot of people. Just look at his body language in the debate, this last debate. And, I mean, it was almost like a mini-me of Biden. He didn't have quite the big grin and didn't laugh quite as loud, but he was chuckling and laughing and ah-ha and smirking and constantly interrupting. Yeah, he was almost as bad as Biden. Bad, nobody can compare to Biden. What a buffoon and a clown. In any case, I want to thank you for being with us tonight. We'll be back next week. Nick Taxi will be joining us from Da Progressive. Be sure to check out the Susan Bradford website. And what did I just was? Right Scoops. What was it? Oh, gosh, I feel bad. And I mean, it's a new website, and I just there we go. Conservative Scoops, not Right Scoops. I think that's another website. ConservativeScoops.org. ConservativeScoops.org. So thanks for joining us tonight. It's a pleasure. Thanks for downloading if you've downloaded, and we'll be back with you next Wednesday night, 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Have a great week and be safe out there, and convince your libtard friends to vote conservative.
You're listening to The American Hour with Commander Tom Garcia on the USA Talk Radio Network.